Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business, you name it, they'll find the insurance policy to fit your needs, and they'll find the best price for you. And if there is a claim, they will jump in and they will work right to the end to make sure you get exactly what you deserve. Peace of mind is so important when it comes to your insurance agency. And that's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. You want to be with the best? Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulon got a few moments to talk about the Steelers. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. In the fourth quarter late, the Raiders and the Eagles tied at 10. Merrill Reese picks it up.
Ball is spotted. Kick is away. He's got the distance. It's gone!
That's pure joy right there. The Eagles secure the home field advantage in the NFC playoffs with the win last night. That means Minnesota dome team, New Orleans dome team, Atlanta dome team, Rams Southern California team, Carolina Panthers Southern team, all of them would have to go through Philadelphia at some point if they were to survive and advance to try and get to the Super Bowl. And in January, last night was a preview of January in Philadelphia. It was cold. Now, here's the problem. I don't think the Eagles are really playing that well right now. They're not, you know, no Carson Wentz, that really hurts. That's not a put down on Nick Foles. I mean, there's a reason why Carson Wentz is the starter and why he gives you your best chance of winning. That's because he's Carson Wentz.
But I'll tell you, that pass rush, though, that middle of the line there for the Eagles, that's going to create havoc. The only quarterback that scares me in the NFC would be Matt Ryan, obviously.
I think Drew Brees would scare me.
Oh, and Drew Brees. I forgot about Drew. I'm sorry. That's my fault. I'm so used to them not being in the playoffs lately. I completely forgot about Brees. And Brees, yes, you're right.
I mean, what New Orleans has is this, and this is where being a dome team won't bother them compared to other people. They have a running game. Mm-hmm. Your running game, it doesn't matter if it's indoors or outdoors. And it doesn't matter if it's home or away. If you have a running game, it travels.
And their D's been very good lately, too.
The Saints are pretty good. The Saints, of all the teams out there, I'd be more concerned about them than anybody else. I just feel like the Eagles are playing good, but they're not playing great. They're not playing their best football right now. Now, that may change in 3 weeks.
I mean, Nick Foles has been a Pro Bowl quarterback. It's not like he hasn't had success in this league. So hopefully he can rekindle that.
Well, we better hope for it. I mean, he's had some good moments. Yeah, he's had some good moments, and he's had some backup quarterback moments.
Exactly. And here's the thing I want to say to Eagles fans, though, because I know if they do lose in the playoffs, it's going to be woe is me, and the whole thing is coming down. Relax. This is the beginning. Nobody expected them to be 14-2 this year. That was not expected.
And you know what? They may get to the playoffs, ride home field, and get themselves to Minneapolis playing the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, let's just see how it plays out.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be a great playoff in the NFC. The AFC has some hold. The opening weekend for the AFC may have some routes. All right. Let's get to Neil Coulon of USA Today. Neil, of course, right now is the only guy I know that has to rent a U-Haul to bring all of his personal gifts back. Neil, welcome. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you as well. And yes, I'm taking a break from packing these massive amounts of stuff that we now have to lug back to Pittsburgh. So it's been crazy.
I have to give you credit. I mean, you're one of the few guys I heard that's gone over to U-Haul and said, look, I need something to bring my stuff back. So.
Definitely not mine. I have a 5-year-old daughter. She's having a blast.
Believe me, I have 4 grandchildren around. I watched, there's paper everywhere. The Steelers obviously overwhelmed an overmatched opponent that is just the wounded animal on the side of the road in Houston. But that's something they needed, wasn't it, to just get one of those and just get that feeling back?
Yeah, I think you look at where the Texans are. I mean, it's obvious that their season wasn't really, you know, it didn't mean anything. I think to some extent they kind of played like it as well. But at the very least, early, the Steelers came out with, you know, the mentality that you hope that they would have. It's very much a, you know, this is a business. The first half, and they took care of business. It's exactly what they needed to do. I thought that was about as sharp an executed offensive half that they've had all year. Yeah. And I get the strength of the opponent plays into that, but they didn't make mistakes. I didn't think there were bad calls. I thought they stepped on the field, did exactly what they needed to do, and I think it's a great way to respond. It's a really tough loss the previous week. It's what they needed to do. It's what I think fans really wanted them to do, and you got to be really happy. That's probably the most dominating performance that they've had this year, if not the last couple of years.
What does Vance McDonald now add that maybe Jesse James can't?
Vance McDonald adds exactly what this team has been begging to be added over the last 2 years, you know, a field-stretching tight end. They signed with Darius Green to fill that role. It didn't really work out. He got hurt. McDonald has been hurt himself a bunch this season, and he put together a very complete game. And now to the point where it's like, okay, this trade actually kind of makes some sense now. I mean, they didn't give up a whole lot for him. It was more of a salary dump for the 49ers than anything else. But he showed that he's capable of giving the offense another dimension. And to me, it looked like the play calling was sort of meant to reflect, we're going to give everybody a shot here to determine what we're going to need to do going forward. We know what Antonio Brown's role is going to be, but everyone else has a shot to be able to be, you know, impacting the game going forward. I think he did exactly that. I was very impressed just with the way he looked on the field. And he's a great athlete. Hands has really been his issue more than anything, but he's an excellent downfield target. He's a guy that can get open that 12 to 15 yard range, which is something I don't think James is going to really excel at. But having the two of them together, that 12 personnel package that they can throw out of, I think it's going to be extremely hard to defend. It certainly was Monday against the Texans.
Losing James Conner did not help the cause, so they signed Ridley, who had been with the Patriots. We know he's had a fumbling problem during the course of his career, but can he give enough of a break and a change of pace where the Steelers can still be effective, in your opinion?
What I think right now, just speaking to where the team is, what he really is a down killer for Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
You know, for the first time this is the fourth season they've run into this issue of running back depth late in the year. This is a guy that they finally gave carries to. Imagine if they had, you know, tried to keep LeGarrette Blount happy back in 2014.
Yeah.
The situation came up with D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell in 2015 to the point where we got Fitzgerald Toussaint carrying the ball in the second half against Denver. He ends up fumbling and losing. Now they have a guy that they're actually committed to getting some work on the field before they enter the playoffs. I thought it was great. I think the more they can give him the ball, the better. The less that Le'Veon Bell will have to carry the ball in week 17, the better, for, you know, at least for me. I think he looked pretty good. You know, not a whole lot of rust. I thought he made the reads he needed to make. It wasn't a completely, you know, watered down vanilla set of plays that they gave him. There was a little bit of intricacy to that, and I think that's a big part of signing a veteran to play that kind of a role. You know, he's capable of doing things that the rookie may need some time to catch up to, and perhaps in that regard he's a step above Conner. I mean, certainly not athletically, but just from an experience standpoint, that's what they're going to need, and the more they can bring him along, the better off that team is going to be later in the year.
Does it sound to you, Neil, like the first opportunity for Antonio Brown to actually play would be the AFC Championship game if they got that far?
Everything we're hearing now, and this kind of comes down to, you know, pride and desire as well. I don't know if he's going to be 100% at any point up to and including a potential Super Bowl appearance. The key thing is going to be how close to 100% is he going to be, and perhaps more than anything else, how close are the cornerbacks defending him going to be? I mean, it's not exactly a secret that players are going to be banged up and injured a bit late in the year. And mm-hmm. with that, I think if they get him rest now, he's rehabbing it properly. He overcomes a lot of other, you know, nicks and bruises that he may have picked up. And the cap obviously is going to be a concern, but they've got plenty of time to kind of work with that now. You're already seeing him, you know, do almost James Harrison-like crazy workout videos and everything, showing people that he's looking to get back. He's certainly not going to play this week, and they've got a week off after that. I certainly wouldn't rule him out for the divisional. I mean, the real key is going to be to what level is he going to be effective. I think, you know, going back to what I said before, just about how they spread the ball around as well as they did, against Houston. I think a lot of that is a test. They wanted to see what they're going to be able to do with or without Brown going forward. And you saw a very healthy amount of targets go to different guys. You have to be real pleased with the result.
How should they handle Roethlisberger, in your opinion, against Cleveland in Week 17?
To me, you've got a week off. You've earned the week off. I don't think a week and a half is a good idea. For me, you got to play the game. If it's 34-6 in the fourth quarter, maybe I'll rest him there. But I want him to get reps. I want him to get the majority of the snaps simply because you have to work at this. This is it's a precision thing. You know, your offense is a living, breathing organism. You've got to be able to, you know, function fluidly within inside of it. You can't do that on the bench. You can't do that giving Landry Jones snaps. Ben's got to be ready to go. And I understand there's an injury risk, but, you know, you make the same argument in Week 7. You know, you might have him injured for the playoffs. He's paid to play. You've got to get him out there playing. And, you know, he's got to have the majority of the snaps, in my opinion, because he needs to be ready for what's going to be a very good divisional opponent. You know, I don't think the wild card round's going to be as good as the AFC, but the divisional round's going to be nuts. And
right.
He's got to be ready for that.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. I'm just wondering how far you wanted to go. I mean, like, play him 2.5 quarters against Cleveland? I mean,
I get up three scores, I'm probably good.
Yeah, my thought is always 2.5 quarters because I always want him to come out and play a series coming out of the locker room because you're used to doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, it makes as much a regular game for him as possible. Get him as much of a sweat as possible. Get him hit a couple times. Let him feel like he played a football game the next day. Then you can rest. You know, you got plenty of time after that to kind of figure out where you need to go. But there, you know, there's nothing set in stone. Who's to say the Jets can't beat the Patriots? I know that seems really weird. It probably won't happen. But the Steelers beating Cleveland is probably a better bet than the Patriots beating the Jets. But it's still possible. You got to keep an eye on you know, the scoreboard as the game is going on, and come halftime, maybe it's a different decision to make. If and when the Patriots are up 51-0, it might not be worth playing anybody anymore. But get them out there, let them work, let all of them work.
Well, it's funny because my daughter showed me something that I was online, and it showed three huddles, and it said the Steelers huddle, and you see the Steelers in a huddle. And he said, "See the Buffalo Bills, and they're in huddle." And it said the Patriots huddle. It was the officials.
Yeah, certainly a lot of that. And the NFL definitely not helping itself with whatever it is that it's doing. I mean, more than anything, it's like, you know, the idea of having New York look at the replays and make a ruling on the challenges was made when Blandino was still in charge, when he was in that position. All of a sudden, he leaves for Fox. They promote Riverton and River into that position. And now it's like, okay, you have to wonder, would the league have done that with a guy first year on the job? Would they have wanted that? I can say this. I don't think they're going to change it now, but there's no way in the world what they're doing now is going to be overseen by Al Riveron next year. There's no way. I don't know if they get rid of him or not, but you can't go all rogue and do your own thing, okay? I mean, this was literally supposed to be the 50 guys in the bar theory. If they all agree on this being something that they need to overturn, that's when you overturn it. Now he's just kind of doing his own thing, deciding that if he's going to be an official on the field. And to me, I don't know how deeply you get into economics, but it's the Peter principle. You know, there comes a point that you can't promote somebody past a certain level. He's wanting to be a referee on the field because he doesn't understand his own job. You know, I don't know how many more examples of that he wants to provide the public. But what's worse, what's more frustrating than the calls is his explanation. It's obvious that he doesn't understand what the stated intention of instant replay is. And that, more than anything, should be what's most frustrating. It's like, there's nothing at all that says you're supposed to be independently making these calls on the field. The official was right there. He's on top of the play. I get that you might have noticed, you know, under a microscope, the ball moved a centimeter or whatever, but that's not enough to overrule the call.
That's right.
You can't say in you know, super slow motion replay, this is the way we should be legislating the game. In my opinion, it's a complete waste of time. It's frustrating. And it, once again, and I've talked about this on your show, I don't know how many times, it erodes the integrity of football. Again, they do this on a weekly basis. You don't understand why. At what point do they not say, look, that's not what instant replay is for, okay? We don't want you gunning for your own show after you retire. We want you to do the job we're paying you to do. And the officials on the field made the call. You have to support that, or you have to override it with conclusive evidence. And it shouldn't take you 5 minutes to find conclusive evidence.
Right, and it's somewhat demoralizing for a couple of officials because they looked at each other and consulted. That actually, in the end, I think made a heck of a call, and then they were told in New York they didn't. What?
Yeah, more than anything, if I was an official, I'd be more than frustrated by that.
Yes.
Like, why am I here then? Yeah. Why am I here? If we need to make these kinds of decisions, why don't we just throw everything in the replay booth? I'm on top of this. I did exactly what I was supposed to do. I watched everything. That's as close as it gets. To be honest with you, I could see the official making either call, but I felt the right one. And we're talking about Kelvin Benjamin against the Patriots.
Right.
To me, the call on the field was correct.
Yes.
There was not enough, even close to enough, to say, absolutely not. There's no way that this was a catch. I didn't see that at all. I don't understand how he saw it. The whole system needs to be overhauled. I think we're beyond that point now.
I mean, between how things off the field have been handled, taking a star quarterback to court and having it drag out over 18 months, how they've handled just something as simple as how to start the game, to now this, this league seems to figure out every couple of weeks how to suck the joy out of it.
Yeah, so at this point now, it's almost you're better off trying to make bets on what they're going to screw up next. Are we going to come full circle and go back to a coin toss? Is this going to be like, you know, the lights going out during the Super Bowl? What's next?
Oh,
what
yeah.
else can you guys possibly screw up? I'm driving in Minneapolis right now, by the way. It's about negative 2. I don't know if you've been to downtown Minneapolis before, but
many, many times, my friend.
That's not going to be a good location for a Super Bowl. You know,
many, many times. In fact, when you go past the Marriott downtown, which is going to be the media hotel, that's where we stay for football and basketball.
Okay. Yep. I'm familiar with that. Yeah. What's in and around that area? Not much.
No, I mean, there's
Minneapolis by 9 p.m. It's not built for that, certainly not in February.
No.
People aren't going to be milling around the streets.
No.
It's not a good Super Bowl location. And the fact that they decided on that, obviously it's to get a stadium built, which they did, and it's a gorgeous stadium. It's a great place, and the Vikings are a great story this year, but this isn't a Super Bowl town. It shouldn't be here.
No. I mean, look, they've got walkways all over the place. Now ask yourself, why do they have walkways? Because they know it's below zero.
Yep, it is right now. I'm in a nice warm car and I'm about to get out of it. I'm dreading it already. I have no walkways around me.
Okay, I'll give you a quick story about that. Then I'll let you get out of the car. And that is this. Penn State's playing basketball against Minnesota. Penn State had this player from Yugoslavia named Miloš Bogatić. State gets on the bus to go from downtown over the river to the University of Minnesota campus and play at Williams Arena. All right. And he gets on the bus, and he's got his uniform on. And he walks past Dick Girardi and me, and he says, "Memo to Miloš, next time wear long pants, Minnesota." It's like, okay, great.
Yes, Miloš would be correct in that case. Yeah. In fact, you know, we're driving past Mall of America right now. There are parking guards out here that are dressed up like they're in Siberia. And you honestly can't blame them.
Hey.
I'm not even sure if that's enough.
Hey, I'm lying Friday night.
In fact.
Timeline Friday night, NFL Network, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock where you are right now, will be the 50th anniversary broadcast of the time of the Ice Bowl. Okay? There you go.
Yep.
That'll get you in the mood for the Super Bowl.
Great. I love football in this. It's a lot of fun. I might die.
All right. I got a wood stove and a TV. Now you can freeze all you want. I'm watching. Hey, Neil, thanks so much. Happy New Year, my friend. I hope you and your family enjoy the time there.
Definitely. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year, guys.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. And we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And wow.
The computer's just in love with me today. That's what it is.
There's Chris is having computer love. You doing all right?
I think I'm going to make it. I think I'll be fine, but it's been slow all day. It was on Christmas vacation. It had a little too much to eat yesterday or something. I don't know. Jeez.
Hey, you know what? We're having a good time. That's all.
That's all that matters, really, at the end of the day. That's all that really matters.
Ah, it's just you and me out here. We're having a good time.
That's
what
it.
The heck? You
That's
know
it.
What?
There's
a little... let me tell you what's happening on the show later in the week. Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer, my two co-hosts from the Blue White Tailgate TV show. Now, see, what I'm doing is you, if you notice, like the people I'm working with, Chris, I'm forcing them to come on the show this week.
There you go.
You're gonna see a pattern here. So if you're a co-worker of mine, you're being forced to be on the show.
That's right.
So Thursday, we'll have Lou Prado on Penn State's history with Washington. Then we'll have Dick Girardi on Penn State basketball. Then we'll have Todd Sadowski and Trey Bauer from the Blue White Tailgate TV show. On Friday, Jack Ham and Derek Williams. And then from the Washington Network, Bob Rondo and Damon Heward.
Got the Fiesta Bowl covered.
So we'll have it all covered for you. We're going to have a good time with this. I'm looking forward to it very, very much. Great to have you with us on the show today. Give us a call at 800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. Love to hear from you. And Chris has some things he wants to solve in the next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to have you with us. Well, Chris, you claim that either there's a beef that you have or something that you want to solve.
All right. Well, it's basically with the bowl system. I mean, it's kind of with the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing, the playoff system, the amount of bowls. We have 40 bowls that nobody cares about at all, with the exception of maybe the BCS bowls as they were, and maybe the Sugar Bowl or some of the name bowls that people still care about. But for the most part, nobody cares. Like, you're talking about the Heart of Dallas Bowl. Nobody cares. Yep. Nobody cares. Even fans of the teams that are playing in the game, they probably don't care either.
Right.
The only people that are there are there people that, you know, they have a vacation or they got tickets for free or whatever. So the way that I would fix this is expand the playoffs to 10 teams.
Yeah.
And start the playoff on December 16th like they did this year, and do the first round in these bowls that nobody cares about. Because if you're going to tell me that, I don't know what the teams were, like, let's say number 3 and 10, whoever they were, if you're going to tell me Penn State and I don't know who the whoever the number 3 was, off the top of my head, I can't remember. Let's just pick out Clemson. At the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl in Atlanta, Georgia. You don't think that place is going to pack out and draw ratings?
Well, sure. I'm sure it would.
So why wouldn't they do that? Like, why wouldn't... Like, you want to talk about customers always right? I guarantee the customer would like this better.
Well, I'm sure they would.
So... That is my proposition. That is what I'm saying. You could draw up a whole bracket, and you can make the whole month of December. You could own the month of December as a college football. Like, totally own it. Instead of it just laying dormant, just watching the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl.
Right.
Or my favorite. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, my favorite one is the Cherry Bundy Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl. Or the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. That was a classic one between Temple and FIU 28-3. It was a good one. Yeah. Nail biter.
Well, you know what? I've always had a theory about the bowl games when people talk about, you know, number of bowls and so forth. Are there too many bowls? And I said, you know what? Everywhere you look on television, for example, you have choice. Everywhere. You may be... Okay, for example, maybe you think now at this point, let's go general media here. At this point, maybe you think there have been too many Star Wars movies. Now, I guess Star Wars, the last one that came out, did really, really well at the box office, but nowhere near as well as the last one did. Okay. So maybe you think there are too many Star Wars movies. But you don't have to go if you don't want to. Maybe somebody really wants to go see it. So, again, you know, that's something to consider. Maybe you're somebody that loves holiday movies and Hallmark Channel, and there's somebody out there that doesn't, and then you think there are too many of them. Okay, fine. You can then switch over and you can watch a Bond action movie on some other channel, or you can go out to eat. Doesn't matter. Whatever is your personal interest is what it comes down to. And so too many bowls, I'm going to tell you right now, there's some people right now, Chris, that are probably watching the Heart of Dallas Bowl because they got their feet up, they got the day off, they don't have anything else to do.
No, they have money on the game. That's why.
Well, they might have money on the
game. That's what it is. That's all. I don't know. Look, I'm a sports fan since I'm like 6 years old. I'm 41 years old now. I have never, ever, ever, and I love college football, but unless my team was playing in it and playing for something, I don't think I've ever watched a bowl. Like, I don't think I've ever, you know how I'm a hardcore Syracuse Orange fan.
Sure.
I would never watch the New Era Pinstripe Bowl unless it meant something, or the Forster Farms Bowl. Like, that would never happen. And I know I know what you're saying. But
you see, for me, for example, like the Pinstripe Bowl, now I don't know, I don't know what day it is, or because I got to travel this week too. But I'll probably watch some of that because I know the Iowa guys. You know, I the Foster Farms Bowl. I know some of the people in that game.
But that's the point. You know people. Like, you're Steve Jones. You call Penn State games. You know. But I mean, you've actually talked to the kids on the field. I mean, is that what it's reduced to? Like, why not make it into? Because first off, everybody complains about the playoff system. This is a way to solve both problems in one swoop. And I know that people are going to say, well, it's traditional, or teams make money on this, and blah blah blah. Who cares? NCAA teams should not be making money, or if money is the issue, if money is the issue, then the playoff system would definitely make the schools and the NCAA as a whole way more money. Hands down, way more money.
Yeah, well, money is the issue because of the sports that don't make money. Remember that. That is always going to be the issue in the NCAA. It's always going to be, and this is where I feel Mark Emmert, when he's had to testify, for example, in the O'Bannon trial. I don't think he's testified or had a deposition in the Kessler case, but in the O'Bannon trial. And I was highly critical of him for this. When they started talking about the money, okay, that's great. Let's talk about the money. All right. He never explained where the money went. The movie It's a Wonderful Life was just on. Okay. Now, did you see the movie at all? Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yes. Like, forever ago, but yes.
Okay. There is a scene that right after George Bailey gets married to Mary Hatch, where they're about ready to go on their honeymoon, and it's raining. And Ernie, the cab driver, looks back. He goes, boy, I've never really seen one before, but that has all the earmarks of a run on the bank. And, of course, back during the Depression era, this happened.
Right.
Well, he runs the building and loan. So he gets out of his car and he goes in, and then she follows him. And they said, look, Potter's offering 50 cents on the dollar. He says, better to get something rather than nothing. And he says, look, I don't have that money here for you. Because one of them says he wants $242. He says, I don't have that here. He says, you don't seem to understand. He says, your money is in Bob's house, and your money is in Angie's house, and your money. He says, we all are doing this together. So we're taking the money and we're putting it into other things together. Well, that's the way college sports works. Eh? The money college football and men's basketball get goes in so you can have a volleyball program, a softball program, a baseball program, and yes, a wrestling program. Okay, you want to know how many wrestling programs? There are 75 wrestling programs in Division I. You want to know how many of the 75 make money?
Probably not
many. Take a guess.
Probably not many. I'm going to say 7.
How about minus seven than that?
Oh,
zero.
Wow. Wow.
There isn't a single wrestling program that makes money in the country.
Right.
None.
That makes sense. Okay? I've never watched wrestling in my life.
Right. No, I'm just saying, but they all lose money. Now, why is that? They don't have substantial radio contracts. They don't have substantial TV contracts. And those are the two key factors. Penn State, for example, sells out in wrestling all the time. Rec Hall is a dynamic place to be for a wrestling match. And I think people assume because Penn State sells out in wrestling that they must be making money in wrestling. And it couldn't be further from the truth. Because they don't have a money-making radio contract. They don't have a money-making TV contract. They do have sellouts, but they also have to travel. They also have the expenses of having the program, from meals to, you know, I mean, everything that goes with the expenses of a program.
Sure.
Okay? So they lose money on it. But why are they able to exist? They're able to exist because football makes an abundance of money. They're able to exist because men's basketball makes an abundance of money. And they do it because they have radio contracts, TV contracts, corporate contracts, through the conference, what they have, bowl contracts, in the bowl game contracts, all part of the ability to get more money into the coffers.
So this is why Wake Forest and Texas A&M are playing in the Belk Bowl on Friday.
Well, I mean, the majority of the money is made through, obviously, the New Year's Six bowl games. Right? They make the majority of the money. Let's be straight about that. For example, I don't know what the payout is now. I think it's like Penn State's playing Washington in the Fiesta Bowl, and I want to say the payout is supposed to be between $17 and $20 million.
For each school or for the NCAA as a whole?
For each school.
Okay.
The NCAA gets nothing out of this. The NCAA has nothing to do with the bowl system. Nothing. Okay?
So it's the bowls are each individual, their own thing?
Well,
just
they're
so
done,
I understand
they're,
it.
They're done through the conferences.
Okay.
But what happens in the Big Ten, for example, is that Penn State, now, so Penn State goes to the Fiesta Bowl, and they bring that to the conference. Wisconsin goes to the Orange Bowl. They bring that to the conference. Ohio State's going to the Cotton Bowl. They're playing on Friday night. That goes to the conference. Michigan goes to the Citrus Bowl. That goes to the conference. Iowa goes to the Pinstripe Bowl. That goes to the conference. Purdue goes to the Foster Farms Bowl. That goes, and so on and so forth, okay?
Sure.
Well, then they take all that money, Chris, and they divide it up evenly, and each school gets a cut. So Indiana, which is not in the bowl game, gets the same cut as Penn State does. Get the same cut. All right? It's all even. Now there are expenses involved. Penn State gets an expense check, for example, to go to the Fiesta Bowl. If you go beyond the expense check, you have to pick up the excess. All right?
Right.
They don't.
Right.
Okay, Wisconsin gets one to go to the Orange Bowl. The expense check goes to for the Cotton Bowl, and so they all you get expense checks. But then they take all the bowl payouts, they put it into a pool, and they divide it up evenly. Football and men's basketball have revenue sharing. Now the old system used to be that if it was a Big Ten game, it was half the gate went into the conference, and then you know they pooled that together, and that was again divided evenly. Now I think they put a number on it, and by putting a number on it, I want to say football is a scale between 650,000 and a million, depending on the attendance of the game, and men's basketball is between 27,000 and 65,000. On a floating scale, depending on what the attendance happens to be. Then they all put that in the pool, and then each school gets a cut of that. So there's a lot of different ways the football and men's basketball get money into programs. And so this bowl system is part of it. Now, how much money are you getting from the RNL Carriers Bowl?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Big Ten
doesn't care because they don't have a team in it, nor will they ever have a team in it. They're not connected with it.
Right, but do you think the Gilded New Mexico Bowl, like they're getting a bag of balls and like some tacos. Marshall and Colorado State walked away with that. Like they're not getting a lot from the Gilded New Mexico Bowl. So why
well,
can't it
just... They still have to have payouts and they still go to their respective conferences. So Conference USA, you know, it's hard to make money when you're in the lower level conferences. It really is. I mean, it's hard to do. You don't have great television deals. You don't have great bowl deals. But also remember that ESPN, now this is where ESPN's brilliant. I mean, you know I've been critical of ESPN many times.
You love ESPN. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay? But this is where I want to give them credit for a level of brilliance. And that is, they understand at this time of the year that people are home and, look, they'll watch games. So they actually own 13 of the bowl games.
Yep.
They own them. And by owning them, they've turned them in from they've turned bowl games, which used to be nonprofits, you know, and bowl games used to be, hey, let's promote the city, let's give some money to charity. That's what they used to be. It's not like that anymore. And because it's not like that anymore, you now have for-profit organizations. There are now 17 bowl games that have for-profit organizations owning them, including 13 by ESPN. And it's brilliant on their part, because what is ESPN looking for at this time of the year? Live programming. What do they think live programming looks, I mean, that's really great for them? They feel college football is great live programming.
That's the only reason you'd watch any cable show, cable channel at this point anyway. It's like the only reason why you'd purchase cable is for live programming.
Right. And so they understand that. So they have purchased these games. Okay, great. So that's what they've done. They've purchased these games, and it's part of their it's part of what they do.
Well, they also own the playoff system too. So what would be the harm in, let's take December. I'm looking at the schedule for December 17th. You had two games that day. You had the Gildan New Mexico Bowl and the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl. One was in Montgomery, Alabama. One was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Why not change those into playoff games and then add another one for a lesser team, like for a lesser, like a, you know.
Here's the problem I have with an expanded playoff. I know how long and tough a 12-game season is. You know, I don't know how far you want to keep pushing the playoff part of it, where, like, these are extra games where, for example, let's take the 16th of November, all right? What would be Penn State's biggest problem playing a quarterfinal game on the 16th of November? Or around a 16 game on the 16th? What's their biggest problem?
I mean,
Finals week.
Yeah, well,
Penn State's in finals that week, right? A lot of schools. No, I think Bucknell's final, I want to say, ended Wednesday of that week, if I remember what Nathan Davis was telling me what his schedule was. But a lot of schools are in finals around that time of the year. It still is a university.
You can change that type of thing. This is what I'm trying to say.
Like, you can't change finals. You can't look at it and say, hey, the college football playoff quarterfinals are that weekend, so we're going to move finals up a week. That's not how university works. You can't have football wagging the dog here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly. I've never run a university,
right,
but I'm just a fan,
right,
just throwing it out there.
I'm just saying, I understand where you're coming from. This is not where I'm not sitting here saying, oh, no, you're off your rocker.
Oh, of course.
No. I understand what you're saying and why you're saying it, because you're thinking of it from a competitive and entertainment point of view. Okay? Nothing wrong with that at all.
Right.
Okay, now I'm thinking of it from the logistical point of view. How do you do this?
Well, because I even go as far as to say that the playoff system as it stands right now still doesn't solve a lot of the problem. Like, a lot of the complaints that a lot of people have about the Super Bowl, for example, in the NFL, is the two-week break. Like, you're giving these teams, like one team always seems to benefit from the two-week break over another, whereas you're getting a solid month off. Like, these teams aren't even up to the playing standard. Like, Penn State's probably not up to the playing standard they were, you know, 4 weeks ago when they ended their season or whatever. In fact,
when I get to one of the keys to the game on Saturday, I'll tell you right now, when they do keys to the game, I'll tell you right now what I'm going to say, Chris. Which quarterback finds his rhythm the earliest?
Right.
Because I always find that that's one of the keys to bowl games, as to which quarterback gets back and shakes off whatever rusting and gets that mid-season feeling going again. I mean, and that's going to be one of the things I'm going to say. So, I mean, I know what you mean about that. I enjoy it. I mean, I'll watch games. There's two more games today. I'll watch definitely one tonight. I mean, Kathy and I are going to go out to dinner tonight. So we're going to do that. You know, but then when we come back, I'm going to probably sit down and watch a little bit of a bowl game for a little while, because to me, that's good entertainment.
Well, we'll agree to disagree on that one, because I can't. they have to mean, not that they have to mean something. Like, I, you know, I like the nice holiday thing and watching football in the background. I mean, that's cool, but to me, like, this playoff system could be done so much better, and it just takes college football so long to get it.
Well, I had Jim Delaney on the show, what do you think, Chris, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something and, like that.
Okay, and I know, you know, Jim gets some, I think gets a little bit too much flack sometimes about a couple things. I'll leave it at that. But people have no idea how hard he worked. How hard he worked, I mean really hard, to get just the BCS to get one to play two. It took so much to do that. And a lot of working around the bowl system and working around the bowls and what they wanted and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to this. So getting it from two to four is actually a major accomplishment. And I think sometimes people don't realize, you know, and I don't blame them for not realizing. That's for example, that's why you got somebody like me doing a show like this where maybe I can explain one or two things. Hopefully I'm doing it right.
No, absolutely. Well,
we will come back with more in a moment and wrap it up on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Just can't believe you are not watching the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I can't do it.
You're just such a negative Nancy. That's right.
There's no serious. Hey, my Orange Men aren't in it, so I can't watch it.
Well, I can tell you right now, you can watch every single bowl game, every one of them, and you're not going to see Syracuse there. The last game they won was over Clemson.
That's true. Yeah, no, the Heart of Dallas Bowl just went final, 30-14 final Utah.
It's a good win for Utah. You know, the funny thing is, I'm not a big West Virginia. Ah, well. All right. Hey, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummelsworth. Steve Jones on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.